Welcome, Discovery Rangers. Today we will be exploring Dad's summer science adventures, building nature experiments.
If your kid spends the next 3 months, you know, out of the classroom doing nothing but scrolling on a tablet or playing video games, their brain literally starts to atrophy.
Yeah, it really does. Educators call it the summer slide.
Right, the summer slide. But what if you could use dish soap, a pizza box, and a random stick from your yard to actually increase their reading fluency by September?
It sounds crazy, but it is entirely possible.
It is. Welcome to this custom deep dive tailored specifically for you, whether you are a dad desperately looking for ways to fill those long July afternoons, or, you know, your family listening together on a road trip. Our mission today is to transform the summer break from a screen time drag into an epic season of discovery.
Discovery, bonding, and some really cool STEM learning, too.
Exactly. So what are we looking at today?
Well, we are pulling our intelligence today from a fantastic May 2026 report. It's called Discovery Rangers, Dad's Summer Adventures.
And it's basically a massive collection of safe, low-cost projects, right?
Yeah, hands-on projects designed specifically for kids ages 4 to 12. And the true brilliance of this source material is that it requires absolutely zero specialized equipment.
No expensive lab kits?
Right, none. We are talking about exploring deep principles of physics, nature, and engineering using just the random stuff already sitting in your kitchen pantry or your recycling bin.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we start, like, making a huge mess in the kitchen, we really need to understand the underlying stakes.
The why.
Right. Why are these dad kid projects so vital to tackle right now? Like, the summer slide sounds ominous, but is it really that severe? I mean, is it basically like a video game where you lose your save data if you don't play for 3 months?
I love that. That is a highly accurate way to visualize it.
And these projects are like quick mini games to keep those skills sharp.
Yes, exactly. Because when children are removed from a structured learning environment for a quarter of the year, there's a documented regression in their academic skills.
Mostly in math and reading, right?
Yeah, primarily math and reading. The brain is incredibly efficient, so it prunes neural pathways that aren't being actively utilized.
Wow.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, preventing that regression isn't about forcing kids to sit at a table and fill out math worksheets in July.
No kid wants to do that.
Nobody wants to do that. It's about stealth learning.
Stealth learning. I like that.
It's keeping the brain engaged through active multi-sensory experiences. When a child uses their hands to measure and their eyes to observe a reaction.
And their ears to listen to instructions.
Exactly. They are firing multiple areas of the cerebral cortex all at the same time. This dramatically improves memory retention.
Well, the report actually backs this up with some truly surprising data. There's research from an organization called I'm the Chef 2, published in 2026.
Oh, yeah, the reading fluency study.
Yes, it shows that kids who complete 50 or more of these summer projects exhibit measurable gains in reading fluency. That completely blew my mind.
It is wild, isn't it?
They aren't sitting around reading novels. They are just doing hands-on science activities.
Right, but think about what they're actually doing. They're reading instructions, they're decoding complex sequential steps, and then they're verbally communicating their outcomes.
Ah, so they are learning new vocabulary in context.
Exactly, which is how language is meant to be acquired. Plus, beyond the cognitive benefits, the homeschool scientist source notes this massive emotional component.
The bonding aspect.
Yes. Dads who engage in these simple experiments report having significantly deeper and more frequent conversations with their kids about educational topics.
Because you're in it together.
Right. The shared vulnerability of trying an experiment, maybe having it fail, and then figuring out why it failed together, it builds a profound level of trust.
So you are securing their academic save data and upgrading the multiplayer relationship simultaneously.
Perfectly said.
So let's put this into practice. The report turns the everyday kitchen into a fully functioning laboratory.
The best kind of laboratory.
Let's start with something that sounds like, I don't know, simple arts and crafts, but is actually a masterclass in fluid dynamics. Bubble art.
Oh, bubble art is fantastic. This is targeted at the younger demographic, so ages 4 to 8.
Bubbles seem pretty basic, though.
They do, but bubbles are actually the perfect entry point for exploring surface tension. You see, water molecules are highly cohesive.
Meaning they love to stick together.
Exactly. That cohesion creates surface tension, making the surface of the water act almost like a tight elastic sheet.
Okay, so where does the dish soap come in?
Well, when you introduce dish soap, Those soap molecules force their way between the water molecules. It lowers that tension just enough so the water can stretch out into a thin, flexible film instead of just beading up into a drop.
Okay, but the report has a very specific recipe for this. It's 2 cups of warm water, 1/3 of a cup of dish soap, and a secret ingredient.
The secret ingredient is key.
Yeah, 1/4 cup of corn syrup. Why on earth are we putting sticky corn syrup into a bubble mixture?
Because the enemy of a bubble is evaporation.
Oh, right.
The water in that incredibly thin film evaporates into the surrounding air almost immediately, which is why standard bubbles pop within seconds.
So the corn syrup stops that?
Yeah. It acts as a thickening agent. It binds with the water and drastically slows down the rate of evaporation.
Wow.
It fortifies the bubble wall, making them incredibly resilient.
Mm.
You then drop some watercolor paint into this thickened solution, dip in a wand, and have the kids blow the bubbles directly onto a piece of heavy paper.
And as those, like, reinforced bubbles finally pop against the paper, they leave behind these vibrant, explosive splatter patterns.
It's beautiful.
You get a great piece of art, and you sneak in a lesson on evaporation and surface tension.
It's a win-win.
Now, moving slightly up in age range to the 6 to 12 crowd, the report outlines a homemade barometer.
This one is super cool.
It really is. It takes an invisible force, which is the air pressure around us, and turns it into a completely visible, trackable phenomenon.
Yeah, and the setup is so simple. You just start by cutting the neck off a standard balloon, and then you stretch the remaining rubber tightly over the opening of a small glass jar. You secure it with a rubber band, so you create a perfectly sealed environment inside that jar.
Right. And then you tape a drinking straw to the very center of that stretched balloon skin, leaving most of the straw hanging off the edge like a long pointer.
Exactly. Then you just set up an index card right behind the tip of the straw and draw a baseline mark.
So how does it actually track the weather?
Well, as weather systems move through your neighborhood, the atmospheric pressure literally changes the weight of the air pressing down on everything.
Including the jar on your counter.
Yes. When a high-pressure system rolls in, that heavier outside air pushes down on the balloon skin, causing it to cave into the jar slightly.
Oh, I see. And because the straw is taped to the center of that dip, it acts as a lever.
Right. It pivots on the rim of the jar, so the center goes down, which means the pointer tip of the straw tilts up.
And then the opposite happens for low pressure.
Exactly. When a low pressure system arrives, the air inside the sealed jar is now pushing the balloon up, and the straw pointer dips down. Children can chart the weather simply by looking at a jar on their kitchen counter.
That is amazing. And speaking of other quick projects, the report also briefly mentions doing a solar print for ages 5 to 12.
Oh, yeah, using black construction paper and sunlight.
Right, UV light to make art. And then there's an egg parachute for ages 6 to 12, using a plastic bag to slow a falling egg to teach air resistance.
Both are great, super quick projects.
But here's where it gets really interesting, though. The report introduces oobleck for kids ages 4 to 10.
Oh, oobleck, yes.
I mean, I tried making the oobleck recipe the report suggested, just mixing 2 cups of cornstarch with 1 cup of water. It completely broke my brain.
It's totally counterintuitive.
It really is. If I slowly dip my hand into the bowl, it slips in like warm quicksand. But if I make a fist and punch the surface of the mixture, it fights back like a solid brick wall. I literally almost bruised my knuckles.
You really have to be careful.
How is a liquid fighting back against blunt force like that?
Well, it defies every instinct we have about how liquids operate. Because oobleck is a non-Newtonian fluid.
Meaning what, exactly?
So, a standard Newtonian fluid, like tap water, has a constant viscosity. Its resistance to flow only changes if you alter its temperature.
Like freezing it into ice.
Right. But a non-Newtonian fluid changes its viscosity based on the mechanical stress or pressure applied to it.
So the sheer speed and force of my punch literally changes the physical state of the material.
Exactly. Under a microscope, cornstarch particles aren't smooth. They're actually quite jagged.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When suspended in water, the water acts as a lubricant. If you move your hand slowly, the water flows between the jagged cornstarch grains, allowing them to slide past each other effortlessly.
So it behaves like a liquid.
Right. But when you strike it rapidly, you squeeze the water out from between those particles in a fraction of a second.
So there's no more lubricant.
Exactly. Without that lubrication, the jagged edges instantly lock together, forming a rigid lattice. It behaves entirely as a solid. Until you release the pressure, the water flows back in, and it just melts away again.
That feels like absolute magic, but it is pure mechanical physics happening right in a mixing bowl.
It's the best kind of science.
And, you know, those fundamental physics principles dictating the behavior of liquids and gases in the kitchen are operating on a massive scale outside the house, too.
They absolutely are.
Which brings us to stepping out into the backyard, shifting our focus from manipulating materials to observing them in their natural state. This is the great outdoors section of the report.
Observation is the bedrock of the scientific method. I mean, before you can test a hypothesis, you have to notice a pattern.
Right. And for ages 4 to 8, the report recommends a nature spy walk.
The premise here is deceivingly simple. You just hand a child a notebook, perhaps draw up a makeshift spy badge to gamify the experience, and send them into a garden or a local trail.
The objective isn't just to look at a leaf or a rock, but to deeply interrogate it.
Yes. What is the specific texture? Does it have an odor?
HMH published a piece in 2023 explicitly noting that nature walks develop observational skills. It trains the brain to categorize the properties of living things.
Which is the very first step of biological taxonomy. Mm-hmm. Requires them to slow their sensory input down.
And you can apply that same observational rigor to the sky.
And like
with the cloud-shaped storytelling for ages 5 to 10.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Lying on a blanket and finding shapes in the clouds builds vocabulary and sparks narrative imagination.
And it provides the perfect opening to introduce meteorology, because most kids think clouds are made of gas or some kind of floating cotton.
Right. They do.
You can blow their minds by explaining that clouds are actually composed of billions of tiny, heavy liquid water droplets or ice crystals.
Yes, and they only look bright white because those liquid droplets are scattering sunlight equally across all wavelengths.
It's a masterclass in weather science disguised entirely as a storytelling game. There's also the Bug Hotel for ages 7 to 12.
Oh, that's a great one for teaching habitats. You just cut a plastic bottle in half and fill it with straw, pine cones, and leaves to shelter different insects.
And a waterproof roof test for ages 5 to 10,
uh-huh.
Where you test material science by pouring water over a Lego house covered in foil, plastic wrap, or a tile.
Simple, but super effective.
But speaking of disguising complex subjects, the outdoor section contains what might be the most elegant math lesson I've ever seen.
Oh, the tree height estimation.
Yes. For ages 8 to 12, you take an upright stick, say a broom handle, and measure the length of the shadow it casts on the grass.
Right. And then you measure the massive shadow cast by a towering tree in your yard.
Using just those two shadow measurements and the known height of the stick, you set up a simple proportion.
The stick's height divided by its shadow equals the tree's height divided by its shadow.
Wait, so we are essentially using the sun itself and a random stick as a giant geometry calculator. Isn't this basically a real-life cheat code for figuring out the scale of things we can't physically reach?
It really is. What's fascinating here is how this activity takes a concept that feels punishingly abstract on a classroom whiteboard and makes it instantly physically tangible.
Because you're actually doing it outside.
Right. Because the sun is roughly 93 million miles away, its rays are hitting the Earth at effectively parallel angles.
Okay.
That means the angle of the sun hitting your small stick is identical to the angle of the sun hitting the giant tree.
Which creates similar triangles.
Exactly. The stick, its shadow, and the sun ray form a triangle that is perfectly geometrically proportional to the massive triangle formed by the tree, its shadow, and the sun ray.
That is just so cool.
When a child sees that math isn't just arbitrary rules in a textbook, but rather a secret language they can use to decode the physical dimensions of the world, their entire relationship with numbers changes.
We've decoded the rules of nature with observation and geometry, but the ultimate thrill of STEM is taking those natural rules and using them to bend the physical world to our will.
Yes, which brings us to engineering and design.
Exactly. The report dedicates a whole section to little engineers.
Engineering projects instill a profound sense of agency. A child learns they can manipulate their environment. Just look at the foil boat engineering challenge for ages 5 to 10.
That one is great. The setup is simply giving a child a sheet of aluminum foil and challenging them to build a boat that can hold as many pennies as possible before sinking in a bowl of water.
Right. And if they crumple the foil into a dense, tight ball, it sinks like a stone almost immediately.
But if they carefully shape it into a wide, flat-bottomed canoe, it might hold 30 pennies. The material hasn't changed at all.
Nope.
The weight of the foil hasn't changed. Why does the shape dictate whether it sinks or swims?
This is a masterclass in buoyancy and water displacement, which is governed by Archimedes' principle.
Okay, lay it on me.
So gravity is pulling the boat down, but the water is pushing back up with a buoyant force. the strength of that upward push is exactly equal to the weight of the water that the boat pushes out of the way.
Ah, I see.
A dense, crumpled ball displaces very little water, so it gets very little upward push. But a wide, hollow canoe displaces a massive volume of water, generating a powerful, buoyant force capable of holding up dozens of heavy pennies.
Form dictates function.
Exactly.
We see that exact same struggle against gravity in the bridge-building challenge for ages 8 to 12, but, you know, without the water.
Right, just index cards.
Yeah, the challenge is to construct a 6-inch bridge using nothing but index cards and tape. And it has to be strong enough to support a toy car.
Which is tricky because a flat index card suspended between two books will immediately buckle under the weight of a toy car.
Paper has terrible resistance to bending.
It does. To make it work, children have to learn about tension and compression by folding the flat cards into three-dimensional shapes, like I-beams or triangles.
So what does this all mean for the structure in the bridge? When the car drives over it, the weight is pushing down on the top of the deck. Is the physics here sort of like a marshmallow, where pulling it apart from the ends is tension and squishing it down to make a semaphore is compression?
That is a phenomenal way to visualize it. I love that. Bridges are constantly fighting those exact two forces.
Okay.
The weight of the car squishes the top layer of the bridge. That's compression. Simultaneously, the bottom of the bridge is being stretched outward, threatening to snap. That's tension.
So where do the folded cards come in?
When a child folds an index card into a vertical triangle, they are aligning the stiffest part of the paper directly against the force of gravity.
Oh, dramatically increasing its structural integrity.
Yes. They learn to balance the pulling and the squishing so the bridge survives.
There's also a paper airplane challenge for ages 4 to 8 in this section to explore aerodynamics, like how wing shape and tilt change flight distance.
Classic engineering.
And a simple birdhouse for ages 6 to 12 to teach basic woodworking and joinery. Plus, a bonus fact there, wood actually expands and contracts with moisture.
Which is a great little material science lesson.
Definitely. But since we are already thinking about sesmores, we have to talk about the final engineering project in the report. Solar oven sesmores for ages 7 to 12.
This one is so much fun.
We are building a functional cooking device out of an empty pizza box to harness renewable energy.
Yes, you just cut a flap in the lid of the pizza box and line the inside of that flap with aluminum foil.
Right.
Then you line the bottom of the box with black construction paper. You place your graham crackers, chocolate, and marshmallows inside. And then tape clear plastic wrap tightly over the opening before propping the foil flap open toward the sun.
You are literally combining three different thermodynamic principles in one cardboard box.
It's amazing.
The foil acts as a mirror, reflecting additional solar radiation down into the oven. And the black construction paper acts as a thermal mass, right? Because black absorbs the entire spectrum of visible light and converts it into heat energy.
Exactly. But the clear plastic wrap is the critical final layer. It creates a localized greenhouse effect.
How does that work?
It allows the high-energy light waves from the sun to pass through easily. But once that light hits the black paper and turns into ambient heat, those thermal waves can't easily pass back through the plastic.
Oh, so the heat is just trapped inside.
Yep, raising the temperature enough to melt the chocolate and soften the marshmallow over 30 to 45 minutes.
It is a delicious, visceral demonstration of capturing and utilizing renewable energy.
Absolutely.
Now, to ensure these epic physics and engineering projects actually happen and happen without any unplanned trips to the emergency room, we need a rock-solid game plan.
Yes, safety first.
The final section of the report is entirely dedicated to hazard prevention and structuring your summer.
Safety protocols really must be established before you ever open the toolbox or the pantry. The report outlines very specific mitigation strategies.
Like with sharp tools, right?
Right. If an activity requires a sharp tool, the rule is the adult physically holds the tool while the child guides the cut. Or you strictly limit the child to specialized blunt safety tools.
And if you are utilizing heat sources, even a solar oven, you keep a bucket of cold water stationed nearby.
Always.
For younger siblings, specifically those under 8, small choking hazards like beads or pennies must be kept in a designated, closely supervised container.
And wipe up spills immediately. One wrong step on a soapy bubble art puddle can completely ruin a summer afternoon.
Nobody wants that.
No. Mitigating those risks on the front end ensures that the cognitive load stays entirely on the joy of the experiment.
That makes total sense. The report also addresses the organizational burden by providing an 8-week sample plan.
Yes, a great tool for parents.
It maps out 2 to 3 activities per week, like bubble art on Monday, nature walk on Thursday, and it culminates in a review and showcase on week 8, where the kids practice public speaking by presenting their favorite projects.
With a great structure.
But I gotta ask, looking at an 8-week syllabus mapped out on a calendar, that feels a bit rigid for summer vacation, doesn't it? Do families really need to enforce a strict schedule when the kids are supposed to be decompressing from the school year?
This raises an important question about the psychology of free time.
Okay.
The report is very clear that this plan is highly adaptable. It is absolutely not intended to recreate a rigid classroom environment.
So what's the point of the schedule then?
The purpose of the schedule is to combat decision fatigue.
I see.
When a child inevitably complains that they are bored, parents often default to turning on a movie simply because they lack the mental bandwidth in that moment to invent an engaging activity from scratch.
Right, you're just tired.
Right.
But if the menu of ideas is already printed and hanging on the refrigerator, you remove the friction of planning.
Exactly. You don't have to brainstorm. You just look at the schedule, see that it's Tuesday, and pull the cornstarch out of the pantry.
It serves as a roadmap, guaranteeing that dads and kids can bypass the planning phase and jump straight into the execution and the bonding.
That's the goal.
Taking a step back and looking at the totality of the Discovery Rangers report, the core takeaway for you listening is this. You do not need an expensive STEM summer camp, and you don't need highly specialized science kits to make the summer incredibly valuable.
You really don't.
Dad kid projects utilizing cheap, everyday items, dish soap, aluminum foil, index cards, or random stick in the yard can turn ordinary lethargic days into monumental adventures.
You are building critical thinking, you are building trust, and most importantly, you are building amazing family memories.
You are equipping your children with the observational tools and the scientific reasoning required to decode the physical world around them, all while keeping their academic momentum moving forward.
Keep that save data safe.
Exactly. Keep the save data safe. Before we let you go, we want to leave you with one final curiosity.
Well, this is a good one.
The report includes a glossary of scientific terms at the end, and there's one fascinating term we didn't explicitly cover today. Capillary action. The report defines it as the mechanism of how water manages to climb up a thin tube or piece of paper, completely defying gravity.
It is the exact same complex mechanism that giant redwood trees use to pull water from their deep root systems hundreds of feet up into their highest canopy leaves.
It's incredible. Yep. But the report defines the term, but it doesn't provide a specific experiment to demonstrate it.
Which is an opportunity.
Yes. So here's your challenge for the week. You and your kids get to become the lead scientists. Invent your own experiment.
What happens if you dip just the very tip of a dry paper tile into a glass of heavily food-colored water?
Formulate a hypothesis. Watch closely to see how the colored water travels. Discover the magic of capillary action on your own this summer.
I love that.
Get off the screen, step into the messy, magnificent world of kitchen science, and start exploring. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening, Discovery Rangers. If you enjoyed this, please ask Mum or Dad to play another episode for you.